ticker CTXR. We will have a total of 30 minutes, including Q&A. So if you have questions, please type into the Q&A function at the bottom of your screen. So with no further delay, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay, thank you very much, Stepan. I appreciate that. And I also appreciate all of you who are taking the time out to listen to my presentation here. And we look forward to providing you with information on the company. So with that, great. Huh. So with just as a cautionary statement here, as you know, we'll be making forward-looking statements. What we strongly advise everybody to do is please consult with either the SEC.gov or CitiusPharma.com for complete information on a company, because we strongly believe that an informed investor is actually the best investor. Okay. So just to give you some of the highlights on a company here, not only do we have a diversified pipeline, we have a very late stage pipeline. And that late stage pipeline is led by Lymphir, our interleukin-2 diphtheria toxin fusion protein drug, which for cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, the trial for this is completed. We've submitted a BLA. We received a complete response letter. We have issued a response to that complete response letter, and we should be hearing from the FDA shortly as to a PDUFA date. In terms of Mino-Lok, which is a very unique antibiotic lock solution, the only one of its kind on the market or even being studied at this point, we've completed the phase 3 trial there. We'll have a top-line data readout in either May or June of this year. And then Halo-Lido, which is, again, a unique product in that at the time of approval for that, it would be the first and only FDA-approved prescription therapy for hemorrhoids. So most of the markets that we compete in are attractive markets. The CTCL market is the smallest one out of the group, but it's also one that has great potential in terms of what our drug Lymphir can do for those patients, as well as the possibility of an immuno-oncology combination. The CURBSI/CLABSI market, which is for catheter-related bloodstream infections, we're estimating we'll be the only entry in that market. So we'll be close to $2 billion in revenue, half in the United States, half outside the United States. I think the prescription hemorrhoid market, if and whenever a prescription product comes in that market, since there are no FDA-approved prescription drugs there, we think that market can be greater than $2 billion. We've got, in terms of a financial profile, $20.3 million cash as of 12/31, with runway through August. What separates us, among many things, is the fact that we have invested our own money into the company. I have $22.5 million invested directly. That's not in stock options. That's in direct investment. Same thing with the Myron Holubiak, the co-founder of the company with me. He has $4 million of his own funds invested directly. And the reason we do is because we have strong belief in the company and in a portfolio that we've put together. So we've got some really great value-driving milestones coming up, not the least of which is, as I said before, the Mino-Lok phase 3 top-line data results expected May or June of this year, and then the Lymphir BLA, which we would expect, we expect that they'll come back with a six-month approval date, and we should have that approved by August, mid-August of 2024. So some of you have heard me describe this this page as being, these are our mugshots. So I would just like to highlight, we've built up the company substantially since we acquired Lymphir, but let me just highlight Dr. Myron Czuczman, who's our chief medical officer. We brought him on board about a year before we did the transaction for Lymphir. We had no idea that we would be getting a drug that was right up in a category that Dr. Czuczman is very familiar with, in that he practiced as an oncologist. for 23 years at Roswell Park in Buffalo. He published 180 papers while he was there. And then he went and spent 5 years at Celgene as a vice president in charge of lymphoma myeloma global research. He's not only a KOL, he's a global KOL in a real sense of the word, and has been really, really instrumental in terms of a lot of the due diligence that we did on this drug, along with the programs that we're initiating moving forward. With that, let me give you a quick profile on Mino-Lok. As I indicated before, it is the first and only antibiotic lock therapy for salvaging and sterilizing infected central venous catheters. The only standard of care today for that is to remove the catheter and replace it with a new catheter. Very painful procedure, not totally disliked by patients for the most part. The chief of infectious disease came up with a drug here that will really be beneficial to alleviating suffering by human beings, as well as possibly be life-saving, because an infected catheter can lead to death. So the phase two data that we have indicated strong safety and efficacy. We've been engaged in a phase three trial that basically it's a superiority study. The enrollment was completed December 23. 241 patients enrolled. It was an event-driven trial in that the number of negative events, which is catheters failing, is what we were recording. We're comparing ourselves to an antibiotic lock solution that would be brewed together by the hospital pharmacy. That comparator is what the trial is all about. We have clinical sites in the United States, and when we hit COVID as a real problem for us, we did move that trial to India, but the vast majority of the study of the patient population for this was in the U.S. Okay, so with the catheter market and the overview of that market is that there are about 4 million long-term central venous catheters that are basically less than a month or greater than a month in the United States. Out of that, 500,000 infections occur annually, as best as we can tell. And the adverse event profile associated with mortality and morbidity is anywhere from 12 to 25%. So today, the only option is remove and replace. So as you can see from the chart, what happens is the catheter itself is inserted usually in the subclavically by the collarbone area. It gets threaded to the heart, the superior vena cava, and that's how the IV treatments go. These IV lines are lifelines for these cancer patients most of the time, since they may be getting chemo, they may be getting medications, they may be getting nutrients. So they're a lifeline. The problem with removing and replacing the catheter and replacing it is, in a new spot, is that the patient experiences significant adverse and psychological symptoms from this. It's about somewhere over $10,000 for a remove and replace procedure for both of those. And then the cost of a CLABSI/CURBSI episode in a hospital, when a patient is hospitalized, they're automatically put into the ICU, and that can have a cost of anywhere from $46,000 to $56,000. So the alternative, as invented and developed by Dr. Issam Raad, is Mino-Lok. So Mino-Lok is a solution that contains minocycline, sodium EDTA, a chelating agent, and alcohol. The way it's administered, the nurse will come in, inject this solution into the catheter, and just enough solution to reach the end of the line. The line itself gets locked using hemodynamic principles. Nurses are very familiar with administering IV treatments this way. The medication, our Mino-Lok, will reside within the catheter and line for 2 hours, up to 2 hours. At the end of 2 hours, that nurse comes in, aspirates out the contents, flushes the line, and a patient has 22 hours of uninterrupted IV flow. That was a very important consideration for Dr. Rad when he invented this solution was to come up with something that doesn't compromise the overall integrity of that IV treatment. So 22 hours of uninterrupted IV flow. This is done 5 to 7 days in a row. At the end of that 5 to 7 day period, the line and the catheter are completely sterilized, completely clean, including any biofilm, which is bacterial slime, which may have formed on the inner walls of the catheter. So this was the phase 2B trial that was done at MD Anderson. This trial basically was a comparator of 30 patients on the treatment side, 60 patients on the control side, which was the remove and replace arm. As you can see, the overall complication rate was zero as compared to about 18% for the remove and replace arm, virtually 100% effectiveness for this treatment. We took that data to the FDA and we had a series of discussions with them because this was brand new territory for them as well as for everybody in terms of a protocol. They wanted a control arm, they wanted a comparator, so we came up with the antibiotic lock solutions that would be used by the hospitals. And where that happens is there are a certain percentage of patients that are not candidates for remove and replace because they no longer have access points. And when that happens, the hospital will attempt to do everything they can to salvage that catheter and that line. It's not a perfect technique, but nevertheless. So as you can see, the primary endpoint in this trial was a comparison of time to catheter failure for about over a 6 week period. So covered what was done during that trial. The FDA encouraged us directly to go and seek qualified infectious disease product, which is a special status for breakthrough antibiotics known as QIDP. It reduces the priority time from all drugs get 12 months as a review time from the FDA. But in this category, if you have QIDP, they reduce the time to 6 months and then an additional 5 years of market exclusivity, meaning that when you combine this with the exclusivity period that you get with Hatch-Waxman, that this will be about almost 9 to 10 years of complete regulatory exclusivity. So Lymphir is the drug that we brought into the company in September of 21. It's an interleukin-2 cancer immunotherapy. It's been on, it was on the market previously by Eisai. Eisai had to reformulate the drug by removing unfolded proteins at the time when it was approved. They agreed to do the work, but they had the drug on the market for 3 years and then went with they took the drug off the market in order to complete the reformulation work. When they took the data to the FDA basically indicated that they had to do another phase three trial, repeat everything because they had from the FDA point of view, this is a new drug. So they went ahead, proceeded ahead with the work, did all the work themselves, including acted as their own clinical research organization, ultimately licensed it to Dr. Reddy's of Japan, a big Indian generic company. Which that company was on an expansion drive into the branded side of the marketplace here in the US, and then decided a couple years later that that was no longer a strategic priority and decided to exit out of the branded side of the market here in the United States. So, and that when that happened is at one point, Dr. Reddy's got that license, as I said. So, with that, just to give you a quick overview in terms of this disease, cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, it's an awful disease. And it initially really starts being treated by dermatologists, as you can see, the plaque stage. But when it enters that tumor stage, it can be horrific as far as the itching that accompanies this. This is not a, this is a very difficult disease to treat. We have a very differentiated mechanism of action that will have an implication somewhere down the road, probably. And that is that besides targeting malignant cells, we eliminate something known as Tregs, which are white blood cells in the microenvironment of a cancer cell. And that is an important factor when I discuss the immuno-oncology possibilities here. So this market has been growing. Initially, when Eisai had to market all to themselves, it was a small market. But as each entry came in from Adcetris, Seagen, and Poteligeo, which is Kyowa Kirin, a Japanese company, as each of these entries came in, the market expanded. The reason it did is because of the way the oncologist treats this disorder. They'll go from one to the next. So if there's no protocol that says this is number one, this is number two, it just as they treat the patients, what they're attempting to do is none of these are curative. They're attempting to keep the patients alive longer. So this is, as I said, about a $300 to $400 million market. This was the trial that was done again. This was a, we had a lead-in study of 21 patients, and the main study had 71 patients. We got pretty much replicated the data that was seen the first time around that it was approved. So the overall objective response rate was 36.2%. Nearly half the patients on a trial experienced a complete response or partial response or durable stable disease. So more than half the patients had at least 6 months of improved or controlled disease. Okay. So side effect profiles were not much different from what they were experienced on their first trial. So let me just bring this up to something that I think I'm probably presenting this for the first time. And this was a preclinical study that added LYMPHIR to PD-1 treatments, PD-1 inhibitors such as Keytruda, which all of you have heard about. The study was done in mice. It compared the combination of LYMPHIR with a PD-1 inhibitor to the PD-1 inhibitor itself. And the reason why this was important is because, as I indicated, LYMPHIR has an MOA of lowering Tregs. PD-1 inhibitors, basically, their overall efficacy is impacted by the number of Tregs. If they have a high number of Tregs, the overall efficacy for the PD-1 inhibitor is reduced somewhat, whereas if you combine LYMPHIR with it, it'll reduce those white blood cell counts and should be beneficial for the patient. So with that, this got published and was reviewed and submitted to a paper recently. So we have a couple of areas of opportunity here for expanding this drug. The peripheral T-cell lymphoma, which is Eisai already has an approval for it in Japan, is an area of opportunity for expansion. But I would like to highlight this. There are two investigator INDs, one at the University of Pittsburgh and the other one at the University of Minnesota. The investigator at the University of Pittsburgh is an OBGYN slash oncologist. He is studying this in combination with Keytruda to see if there's a benefit there for these patients. These are very, very sick patients. He's looking at it in mostly in female solid tumors and female cancers. And we'll probably have a readout on this somewhere in the course of the summer. At least that's what we're anticipating. But this, as an investigator IND trial, it's a trial that the investigator himself has initiated and received approval from the FDA to study usually what are unapproved combination treatments. The other one is at University of Minnesota, and there LYMPHIR is being given in combination with CAR T treatments. And we'll see what those two bring us. There could be some good opportunities there for us down the road, but it's hard to say until we have some positive data. So we like this market. It's got since there are no curative therapeutics on the market, it's attractive from that side. It's got a very concentrated prescriber base. So just want to highlight that for you. There's probably no more than it's somewhere it ranges from 500 treaters to about 2,000 across the United States. We've been working for the past year to year and a half to really study this market. We've identified where all the treaters are. We've already set up the sales territories. We know how many representatives we're going to have in calling on these oncologists. We also have pretty good protection in terms of from the regulatory side, due to both from the marketing exclusivity side as well as from the manufacturing side. So some of you have heard me speak about it. We've made announcements about the fact that we will have a spin-out company called Sidious Oncology Inc. It will be what we did have done is place Lymphir into a subsidiary. The subsidiary is being acquired by a SPAC called 10x Kane Acquisition. That SPAC will issue stock. They put a valuation on the company of $675 million, so at $10 a share. The plan is to get this through the SEC. We anticipate that the SPAC, Sidious Oncology Inc., will start trading somewhere in the month of May, and the goal is to really unlock the value of this. The reason why we get asked the question all the time about why are we doing this? The reason we're doing this is because number one, we got no increased valuation as a result of bringing this asset into the company. But most importantly is our goal is not to really dilute the Sidious shareholders anymore. So the plan is that we'll use this subsidiary company to raise capital for the launch of Lymphir. So with that, we'll not dilute Sidious with the marketing expenses and everything that would that has to be raised for launching Lymphir into the market. At the same time, our plan is, and this is our plan overall, is at some point in the future, down the road, when as everything matures, the stock develops a market and so forth, that we would this dividend or distribute the shares in that new company to the Sidious shareholders. So with that, I think that let me just cover Halo Lido real quick. This is we've completed a phase 2B trial with 300 patients. We're going to the FDA next month with a meeting with them to discuss the results as well as a phase 3 protocol. Our objective here, as we've said all along, is to monetize this for the shareholders. We need to generate as much data as possible in order to be able to sell this off or out-license it to a much larger company. So with that, just a quick summary for you. As I indicated before, we've got 20 some million dollars cash, good for us to through August of 2024. As you can see, myself and Myron are significant shareholders in the company. We have 158.9 million shares outstanding plus warrants. So again, that should fully explain to you why we're not doing a raise for Lymphir inside of Sidious. Okay, so at this point, we do have questions. Let's see. So again, one of the first questions on top is why should Sidious investors care about Lymphir being spun off? You should care because we're going to be the 95%, the company will be the 95 to 90 to 95% owners of the subsidiary company. And ultimately, as the earnings come in, they will flow right down into Sidious. And we expect that Lymphir, when it's launched, will be earnings positive in the first year on the market. So one of the other questions we have here is whether we've considered partnering with one of the large strategic players to help with distribution. So at this point, we're working with EVERSANA, which is a major provider to the pharmaceutical industry in terms of sales force, shipping, warehousing, et cetera. So we're getting staffed up that way. We've already brought on board a vice president of marketing who launched major hospital-based antibiotics that help on the Roche, as well as a director of marketing who joined us from Regeneron. The other question that we have here is, let's see, let me look at this. Are there any plans to distribute any NewCo shares when the spin-off happens in May? It won't happen in May, as I indicated. It will happen much later. It takes time because what you don't want to see happen here is to distribute these shares and then everybody, because it's something free, start selling off the shares and depressing the stock price of the company at that point. So you wait till there's some real maturity, people see results, they'll see earnings, it'll be an attractive opportunity for on both sides of this. So the question is, why should I continue holding stock? I've been holding it for 2 years. Well, I think what I want to say, first of all, I appreciate your patience. I appreciate your support. And I share the frustration of everybody relative to the stock price. It's something that nobody wants to see, obviously. And it's an unfortunate set of circumstances that the whole biotech sector took a major hit like that, and that we got delayed on a Mino-Lok trial. But one thing for sure, I learned a long time ago, my motto is one of my mottos is failure is not an option. So we will prevail. We'll get our approvals once we start generating data and putting data out into the marketplace. Hopefully, our valuation will reflect what the marketplace sees. So with that, I'd like to thank everybody for your time and participation in this, and we look forward to continued dialogue with shareholders. Thank you.